We're back. Dr. Lonnie Johnson, Bill Russell put to you, where are we in the JTAC in terms of it happening now?
The JTAC is not as far along as the battery, unfortunately, but we're working on it. You know, I alluded earlier to being able to feed ourselves and get support. One of the challenges with the JTAC, again, was that we had to develop some new materials that didn't exist before. We use proton conductive membranes in the engine.
You would use?
Proton conductive membranes. Membranes that will allow hydrogen nuclei to pass, be conducted through, stripping the electron off and sending the electron through an external circuit.
I can't buy that at the grocery store, can I?
Well, but you can buy it in a fuel cell because that's what fuel cells use. That's how the hydrogen comes in. The proton goes through the membrane. The electron goes out through an external load, powers a light or an engine, a motor or whatever, comes, you know, to complete the circuit. After the proton gets through the membrane, what's driving that process is that the hydrogen gets reconstituted. It reacts with oxygen and produces water. So the hydrogen-oxygen reaction is what generates the power in a fuel cell. In the JTAC, we use pressure, hydrogen pressure, to push the hydrogen through the membrane to generate the current. So as opposed to a chemical reaction to drive the engine, we use pressure. And remember what I said about how an engine works. You compress a gas at low temperature, heat it up, and expand it at high temperature. So we use these proton conductive membranes to conduct hydrogen across and pressurize it at low temperature. Then we go to a high temperature stack and expand it at high temperature, and we get more voltage out and power out at the high temperature expansion than it takes to compress it at low temperature. And so the membranes that are used in fuel cells, however, don't have the material properties that the JTAC needs. The membrane that the JTAC needs to be a high barrier membrane that does not let the hydrogen diffuse through, because that would be an efficiency loss. The pressure could actually push hydrogen molecules through without them changing to protons. And so we had to come up with a membrane material that would not allow that to happen. And it also needed to have high conductivity in a dry hydrogen environment. The material that's used and most popular for fuel cells is the material called Nafion, which uses water, and it has to be wet in order for it to conduct the protons. And the JTAC operates better when the environment is dry inside.
You know, I sit here listening to you, and I'm kind of doing a yo-yo. Is this guy a scientist? Is this guy a businessman? Is this guy a visionary? And the answer is yes. That really, at this moment in time, with the challenges we face, and with your wonderful mind able to wrap around all of these things, are you able to distinguish for yourself, who am I today?
Well, I know what parts I like.
But you're also not doing this by yourself.
Right.
Well, I have a team of scientists, obviously. The JTAC idea, the genesis of it was mine. We have a scientist who are working together with me to help bring this to fruition. I'm fortunate to have a team of scientists I would put up against anybody in terms of their technical prowess and abilities, any team. I would like to think that the technology and the caliber of the technology is what has attracted these guys to remain so loyal and helping to bring this technology to fruition.
Since I first came across this engine, I've been dying to ask you, because I understand in general the physics of it. What I've not looked at is the equations, and I'm not sure I'd make sense of them anyway. Does this operate? Does it require high temperature, or is the temperature differential that makes the engine possible?
It's a temperature differential.
Which means this can be applied any place. It could work in the Arctic if you had something, you know, a human body that was warm. The difference between that temperature and this temperature would make this engine feasible.
Actually, you could.
So this is more than just solar energy.
The efficiency, of course, and the amount of energy that gets converted depends on the magnitude of that temperature difference, the efficiency. When the temperature difference is small, the efficiency is smaller. So the higher temperature, which is what makes it attractive for solar, because you can get some very high temperatures from the sun, which means that you can convert in the 60-70% range with the technology. But absolutely.
But it does open other options that have not been explored before.
Not only that, the engine is a thermodynamic engine, meaning that it can operate in reverse. You can actually use it as a heat pump for refrigeration and temperature control. So now
it's just turned upside down. I'm sorry.
Well, operated in reverse.
So and it has no gear. Moving parts. I go back to that in and of itself. The no moving parts thing is a gigantic step, isn't it?
That's very significant. The only thing that was comparable to this is conventional thermoelectric technology. You may be familiar with thermoelectric converters based on the Peltier or Seebeck effect. These are solid-state semiconductor devices, but the efficiency is very low. They're in the single-digit range, whereas the JTEC is a totally different ballgame.
Does it wear out, or do we know yet?
Don't know yet, but there's nothing obvious that would suggest.
Everything is reconstituting.
There's no moving parts to create friction in that sense, so you're not talking about bearings that will wear out.
The membrane, does it get oversaturated with potassium ions or something?
You know, what's intriguing about it, one of the things intriguing about it is, you know, we were actually visited at the National Solar Energy Laboratory, Sandia National Lab, a few months back, and during the meeting, one of the scientists there mentioned the fact that solar cells are very attractive because they're all solid state, they're highly reliable. The problem is that they're expensive because the efficiency is low. On the other hand, the Stirling engine is attractive because it operates on a thermodynamic cycle, so the efficiency is high. But it's expensive because it's a mechanical device and it has a life cycle maintenance cost that you have to factor in. So you have on the Stirling engine, expensive because it's mechanical and low reliability. Solar cells expensive because low efficiency, but the high reliability. The JTEC is in the middle with the best of both worlds. It's an all solid state device, so it has a high reliability of the solar cells. It has high efficiency because it's operating on a thermodynamic cycle like the Stirling engine. So ideally, you've got the best of both worlds in this technology.
I get the sense that I should wrap this up with what Dr. Cornel West has on his answering machine. Stay strong.
Thank you.
Dedication, imagination, hard work, and a commitment to his community characterize Lonnie Johnson's career. History is littered with ideas that didn't work out or were too far ahead of their times or which lost out to competing, often inferior, technologies. Even if Mr. Johnson doesn't win, he has dramatically altered the game. We hope he succeeds. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.